time for our quarterly series of conflict resolution call-in programs. Good morning, I'm Sam Fuqua. Today, talking about dealing with our inner conflict in what many believe are sort of apocalyptic times in some ways. We have the elections, we have issues around racial justice, we have difficult internal conflicts and external conflicts in terms of dealing with the pandemic. And of course, a lot of different conspiracy theories floating about, difficulty knowing which media outlets to trust for information. And internally, that can create a lot of conflict for folks as well as externally. Today, joining us to talk about that, Catherine Newell, who is a interspiritual minister and transformation specialist dedicated to serving human beings, seeking awakening and enlightenment and alignment. She's the CEO and founder of The Faith Space, and we'll hear a little bit more about that. I'm Sam Fuqua, joined as always by my co-host, Linda Newell.
Hi, Sam.
Good to be with you. And Catherine Newell, also with us. Hi, Catherine. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we should say that this is mother and daughter, Linda and Catherine. Linda, I introduced the topic, but I'd like you to weigh in a little bit on kind of our thinking this morning on what we want to try to talk about and what we hope our callers will engage with us about this morning.
Yes. Well, there are so many layers of conflict going on, as we have covered in previous shows. But now what we're starting to feel, at those of us who are conflict professionals, is that feeling of this underlying hum of anxiety and fear, which contributes to conflict, and how the systemic and the personal are connected. And for that, it would be wonderful to hear Catherine's opinions on that and guidance on that, of how they interact with each other, the personal conflict with the systemic conflict and vice versa, and then what can we do about that?
Was that the intro?
That's an invitation to you, Catherine Newell, to kind of set the stage for this conversation.
Yeah, I believe, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm the CEO and founder of The Faith Space. We're a nonprofit based in Denver, and we are an ethical leadership development organization. And we really sit at the intersection of spirituality and social justice. And our goal is to revive the faith we're losing in society. So this is, it feels like every day gets a little bit worse, maybe a little bit better, in different ways. But I'm grateful to have this conversation with y'all because of this very apocalyptic moment, as you say, in history, which really just translates to an unveiling, an uncovering of what's really going on. So this is not news that's happening nowadays. It's just uncovered. Black individuals have always been murdered by the state of this nation. We were a nation founded on slavery and genocide of our native siblings. And so it's really important that we go to the root cause and not just the symptom of what's going on right now. And I love having conversations like this, weaving between the macro and the micro, because it's really heavy, right? What we're feeling in general right now, and then putting that in historical context and realizing that we are all part of this journey together, that we are all playing our part right now, anointed at this moment. But it's been years and years and years building. And we just, and I say we loosely because I mostly mean white folks who have really been clouded by our white privilege to not really see the history that has surrounded us the entire time. So this is a beautiful moment of unveiling, of uncovering, and it looks a lot like a mess, right? It looks a lot like, who do we trust? So the fact that I lead this organization about ethical leadership development, and more than ever, we're wondering, where are the ethical leaders? That gets to be us in every moment if we choose it to be. So I'm grateful to have this conversation, to talk about the history surrounding it, to talk about the moment in time that we really find ourselves in. And I find that what revives my own faith is it's an opportunity. It's not looking at this like an obstacle, but as an opportunity. Okay, there's a mess. Okay, there's a million fires. Okay, there's all of a sudden fire and then snow. Okay, very apocalyptic. But really our unhappiness and really where we start to spiral down, it happens when we don't lean into the opportunity, when we don't access it for the lessons and for the marrow that it naturally gives, when we start judging it and making it wrong instead of, okay, conditions that my ancestors put us in, what can we do about it? Now there's a lot of control. That's the power in that. There's a lot of activism and engagement.
And so with that, there are some people who are doing that well and who are engaging well, who are looking at this from a similar perspective as you, that this is an unveiling, this is going to happen, the mess is okay. What about those who are really struggling with the feeling of that tension and the fear of conflict, either with each other or in the streets, or as a chaplain, I know that you have dealt many times with people in fear. What do you tell them? What do you tell those folks?
A couple things. First, I'll start off by saying I'm still a person. I live with this fear too, that we're all in this together. So I don't believe that anyone's an expert on that. Like, you are the expert of your life, of your emotional regulation. So I empower folks to figure out what works for them, to use whatever everyday rituals, anchor people into the current moment and not into spinoffs of what ifs and worries. A lot of it, though, is about not judging that fear and listening to it. 99% of our emotions just want to be heard. And so that's what anxiety really is. We have a culture right now really living into anxiety and depression. Most people are experiencing some form of it. And anxiety is not an emotion. Anxiety is just running around an emotion, avoiding it. And so we cause ourselves a lot more pain avoiding feeling that fear for a minute. It is right to be afraid. There is no one leading us out of this right now. There really isn't. And even the choices that we have are like, like the best choice we have is still not the best choice, right? So it's a really frustrating time to be alive. And that's where I focus on the things I can control. So there's a lot of mindfulness techniques that can be utilized in moments like this. Of course, meditation, and prayer, whatever works for you. But certainly for me, it's community. It's connecting with people that matter to me, that remind me that I'm human, that remind me of joy. A lot of times that's children right now, that I think that children are so resilient, so hopeful. So if you have a child in your life, they might be going through their own process during this moment in time as well, but they're so vibrant, and they often are the most hopeful and faithful of us all. So there's quite a bit of opportunity to navigate the fear, but the most important part is that we navigate it. The problem, and what you said, you used the words uncomfortable with conflict. So I think just the radical acceptance of that would be great. I think that people really do themselves a disservice and create way more harm on this planet by avoiding conflict because it's uncomfortable. That, too, is a white supremacist paradigm. This discomfort, you know, the white folks, especially in the suburbs, right, we get comfortable. There's a lot of comfort in our lives. There's a lot of things that we like the way that we like them. And our siblings of color and queer siblings and people that have any kind of marginalized identity in our society really live every day in discomfort. And so what we're doing right now is just activating our empathy on a whole other level. And that exists within us, and that exists in between us at an interpersonal level as well. And so this is really an opportunity to lean into that and not to judge it and say, wow, look, there are people that have lived this way every day, all the time, that every day is a pandemic in some people's lives, that every day they're riddled with fear of their neighbors, that every day they're afraid to go to work because something could harm them there. Activating that empathy is a superpower. It's not making anyone weak. And I think that the fear of the conflict is way bigger than the conflict itself. So what if we sat in those tough emotions within ourselves and with the people that we love and said, okay, this is a mess, but you don't handle a mess by just constantly going around screaming it's a mess or going in your backyard and pretending there's not a mess. You handle a mess by cleaning it up piece by piece. You pick one room or even one corner of a room at a time and you say, okay, I can handle this thing today. I've got this part of it. And that's a powerful place to be.
That's Catherine Newell, our guest this morning on our quarterly conflict resolution call-in program here at listener-supported KGNU. We'll open up the phone lines now at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. If you'd like to join the conversation, how are you dealing with your own anxieties and fears during this very difficult time? Or do you have questions about specific aspects of what you're dealing with that we might be able to discuss with Catherine? Please join us at 303-442-4242. Sam Fuqua in the studio with Linda Newell joining us by phone. Linda?
Yes, one of the questions I had, you started to touch on it, Catherine, which is with your background in as a trauma chaplain, can you give us an example of how you saw somebody with resilience, or you saw them march through conflict bravely, or perhaps not, and you were able to walk them through it? Or do you have any examples that might help us to maybe tap into our own story?
You know, and I think we just, Catherine's line just dropped, Linda, so we'll...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll get her back on the phone and be back with the conversation with Catherine Newell in just a moment. But can I turn the question back on you, Linda? How are you dealing with anxiety and, you know, and listening to your fears, as Catherine said? How are you handling it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a being immunocompromised with the pandemic. It has radically changed how I live life. And I've started, as probably most of us did, just started with the fear of, oh, what if I got this? What if a family member got this? And I was in a fear quite a bit. And then once I figured out my rhythm and my protocols around living that, I think it was similar to what Catherine was saying. It was just like one room at a time, one process at a time, that I realized, okay, this is how I need to do this now. And not that I miss going out and doing certain things that I can't do now. On the other hand, I have come to peace with that, knowing that it is temporary. It might be a long temporary, but it is temporary, and I will make it through, and I'll make it to the other side. That's helped a lot.
Thanks, Linda.
Do we have Catherine yet?
We did get Catherine back on the line.
Okay.
Yeah. I apologize for the phone difficulties this morning.
I'm here.
Hi, Catherine. Yeah. So before the line cut out, we were involved in asking about some strategies for dealing with this anxiety. And for when we listen to our fears, which I appreciated your point about that earlier, but is listening to our fears enough? I mean, we still have them. How do we cope with them?
So actually, it's a yes and, Sam, with that. With 95% of the time, when you really honor an emotion, it dissipates. Very rarely does it really stick around. And if it does, it does not ever do with the same vengeance. So a lot of the fear, it becomes the fear of the fear, or the anxiety of the fear of the whatever. And that's when that like tornado, that spiral really starts to happen. So I think that a lot of folks really love equations of, okay, I'm in a jail cell, get me out. And you hold the keys to your freedom. No one else can get you out of that. And having those tough conversations with yourself, how I do that can happen a myriad of different ways. That can happen during meditation. That can happen during certainly a therapy session. If you don't have a therapist, now is a really great time to get one. No better time than a pandemic to access therapy, tool for us all. Different ways of conversing with yourself, whether that's songwriting or writing in a journal, or any form of really conversing with yourself. I also take time in nature. It's the ultimate alchemizer. We are also part of nature, and so the more that we can remember that we come from Earth and that we are held and blessed and honored to be here, the better. So strengthening that relationship and talking to trees, to plants, to animals are huge ways, very beneficial to unleash some of this baggage that we are even afraid to touch right now. So the majority of the hurdle is just doing it. Once you start, as any person who has started therapy will tell you, once you start talking to someone, it just comes out. It's just a muscle that you're building. So just as people, you know, you go to the gym the first day, you're not expecting to run, you know, a 5K on the treadmill that first day. You're not expecting to lift 160 pounds dead weight. You have to build those muscles over time. And people forget that in our culture because we are living in an emotionally bankrupt society right now. And we have been for a while. So if you are able to access your emotions and have any kind of remote emotional intelligence, that's amazing. Take the win on that. And so that's what a lot of this is doing, is just building up that muscle, telling yourself it's okay. And to Linda's point earlier, as a chaplain, especially in traumatic situations, I saw this often. And I will tell you, you will get through this. I have seen people, whole families rally around folks dying, whether they were old or whether they were children dying. People survive unspeakable things. Unspeakable things. There's a whole song about this in that musical Hamilton right now. And if you haven't seen it, definitely see it. It's a revolutionary time in our society, especially in the U.S. And there's a whole song about that, about the unspeakable things that can happen. And people do survive them with each other and with acknowledging the grief. So much of what's happening with COVID and really on our planet is related to the lungs, is related to how we breathe. And last year, you know, the lungs of the earth were on fire in the Amazon. So much of this is related to grief. That's where grief lives, is in our lungs. And so I think this is a time of mourning. And as someone who has presided and just helped people through many, many deaths, don't be afraid of this. This is just a composting moment. Let what needs to go, go. It's the clinging. It's the attachment to these old emotions, to the idea of conflict, that's much worse than the conflict itself.
That's Catherine Newell, our guest this morning on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, just a little before 9 o'clock. And we're talking with Catherine Newell, the founder and CEO of the Faith Space. She's also a former hospital chaplain, as you heard her say just a minute ago, talking about how we deal with our anxieties and our inner conflicts during these difficult times. The phone lines are open at 303-442-42, but for safety reasons during the pandemic, the studios are operating with a fairly skeletal crew, so you might have to let the phone ring for a while, and I might just put you directly on the air. But if you'd like to join the conversation, share what you've been dealing with and how you're dealing with it, please give us a call at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. Catherine, what about as we get closer to the elections in specific, let's talk specifically about that. I don't think there's that many people who have an inner conflict about who they're going to vote for, but they have, there may be some still on the fence about that, but I don't think many. But we have anxiety about what is going to happen. You know, is our candidate going to win? Is the current occupant of the White House going to vacate easily if he loses, etc. Specific to that piece of the big situation now, how do you recommend people try to calm their anxiety about that, if that's even possible?
Again, I will reiterate that anxiety is just an avoidance of emotion. So if you want to calm your anxiety, feel the fear, the sadness, the anger, especially, it's all okay to feel those things. I think that that's a legitimate fear. I think that that's also part of what we're doing in our society is really, you know, medicating and freaking out about depression and anxiety. And I think that if you're not experiencing some level of it right now, you're really avoiding. So it's okay to feel those things and to accept that. I wonder those very things myself. I think that the election, I've worked many campaigns. My first career was in politics, worked at the state legislature in Colorado, ran a few campaigns and got out and went to the ministry, of course, way less politics with God. So I struggle with this as well. Thinking about the future, it doesn't help though. So I really, what helps me the best, honestly, is allowing myself pockets of time to spiral, to go, okay, I have 5 minutes here or 10 minutes here, and I play this little game with myself, like, okay, worst case scenario. And I name, like, the worst case scenario. Like, not like, oh, he doesn't leave office. More like, there's a full-out civil war, and my neighbors take all my ration food, or something like crazy, or something harms my family worse than a pandemic. And then I think about the chances of that happening. And sometimes, most of the time, it's just getting out of my body of, okay, this is the worst thing that could happen. The chances of that happening won't happen at all. So we can't help what happens. We really can't. Whatever happens, happens on election day and certainly afterwards. I will tell you, I'm not planning basically anything in my life for like the next, after November 3rd, I'm not doing it. Nothing's really on my calendar. Nothing's, much of it is also not on the faith-based calendar as well. I really don't know what the world is going to be like. I do know that because we live in an emotionally bankrupt society, that people don't know how to really regulate very well. So I trust myself. I have faith in the universe, and I can only control what I can control. So I focus on those things. And I focus on being a person of integrity and a person of morality no matter what. That's what I can control, is that life happens all the time. I've watched people thinking that they were going to go, you know, to church one day and get in a car accident on the way there and lose a limb or something. You know, your life can change in a split second, and this is a gift. And that's what I think people are forgetting right now, too, is that even in the midst of what looks like hell outside, it really is a gift to be alive right now. And there is a reason why we're alive right now. And so I truly believe that we're anointed in this moment. And so I choose to lean in and access those opportunities instead of thinking that this is a burden. And that is what empowers me in those moments of, well, what if? Well, I know that I'm a resilient human being. And I know that no matter what happens, I will survive it. And if not, I'll be dead, and they won't remember it. So we fear death so much in our society that it's really just the acceptance of, okay, I have no control. and I'm going to rock it out. I can control my response. And what I've seen through countless deaths with human beings is their resiliency, is their ability to laugh 1 minute, cry the next, and hold each other tighter. And isn't that what this pandemic has taught us? That we should not take any of these moments for granted?
Yeah.
I will also say one thing, too, about the QAnon thing, because it relates to these moments are so big. These moments are so intense, and we have to make sense of them. And that's why something so ridiculous like QAnon exists right now. And that's why truth is not something that we can stand upon right now, because people are trying to make sense so much of what's happening. And I saw this the other day on the Daily Show, that they did studies on what happened after Reagan was almost assassinated and JFK was assassinated. And as we know, there's a million conspiracy theories about what happened during the JFK murder, but basically none about what happened to Reagan, because it wasn't successful. It didn't like shatter our world in that way. And so when something like a pandemic happens, it shatters people's world. And instead of looking inward and connecting with whoever they believe is their God or whatever the world view that they have, they can't comprehend. And so they go for this really low vibration answer, because they're willing to listen to anyone right now who can connect dots that shouldn't be connected, that don't need to be. Some might be connected, some might not. But we don't have enough of this acceptance of conflict, of acceptance of, okay, this is happening. Great, roll with it. Instead, we try to put things in boxes, and that's what a conspiracy theory is, right? Like connecting all these dots that really, these lines do not go there at all, and that's okay. We need to sit with what is okay. Like, we're alive right now. That's okay. We might not be soon. That's also okay. These are very serious things, but our ancestors dealt with a lot. I'm sure that we can navigate this moment. I'm sure of it.
And so are you saying that the conspiracy theories like QAnon are getting more traction because of the collective fear or the collective thought?
100%. Why would they exist? Conspiracy theories only exist because they thrive on fear. They live on fear. They would die without it. So it really says that when over 20% of Americans are participating, believing in an actual conspiracy theory, that our president is propagating it through social media and in press conferences, none of that surprises me when we have this amount of fear and this amount of isolation, that we are, you know, more connected now than ever through the internet, and yet people aren't talking with each other. We have not used this pandemic to go inward, to meditate, to read books, to pray, to take time in nature, to go back to our roots as actual human beings. We've just spent hours and hours on Netflix. And so if that's the answer, like if that's the way that we want to cope through these things, then we get a proportional response. So you're just, if the longer you just like avoided a bunch of months of fear by being on social media or by trying to do work the way it was supposed to. Like every person I talk to now, the people that I coach now, everyone's feeling this right now. Everyone's really spiraling. So embrace the spiral. It'd be weird if you weren't. Every day, it's amazing we're alive. There's so much chaos in the world that the fact that people are going to work or even logging on to work from their own homes is a miracle. Take the win. You woke up today. You put on pants, whether they be jeans or pajamas. Like, congratulations. That's really amazing. We need to really be zesty in the current moment right now. We cannot control. Like Sam was asking about the election. Oh, we have zero control over that. The average person has zero control. You better vote, though. If you don't vote, go ahead and spiral. I encourage you to spiral. if you're not going to vote, you just, I'm serious, then that is a proportional response to you spiraling. That's the one thing we can do right now, as well as, you know, calling our legislators and just being activists in our own community. The main thing that we can do is have conversations with ourselves, our families, our neighbors. I teach a whole course on this called Navigating Tough Conversations on race with our loved ones. It's a very difficult time to be alive, and what a blessing. I sound maybe Pollyanna to some people, but if you cannot change huge systems, you can change your paradigm about it. And systems change by changing people. I have tried for years to change systems. It turns out it doesn't work. You cannot attack a system. You cannot, and that's what QAnon is doing, right? QAnon is like creating this weird system and saying, oh, yeah, you can change it by saving the children, which we're already working on, right? We're already aware of human trafficking. So it's take the control where you can.
I think one of the things many people have observed about QAnon is people are attracted to it in part because it does give them a sense of community. Folks who are isolated and spending a lot of time on the internet find community on these different, you know, bulletin boards and chat rooms where folks discuss various conspiracy theories. So they're responding to the isolation they feel by seeking community. You know, we're talking about this morning how we're dealing with our anxieties and fears during these very challenging times. Catherine Newell is our guest. She's the CEO and founder of The Faith Space, also a former hospital chaplain. And we invite your calls at 303-442-4242. You might have to let the phone ring for a while, but we'd love to have you join the conversation, talk about how you're dealing with anxiety and fear, or have a dialogue with our guest about that. 303-442-4242 is our number. And Linda Newell, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were about to say something there.
Yeah, no worries. Well, my question is, whether it's who you're voting for, and let's face it, it's not just president. It's also all of the candidates that we're voting for, or all of the issues in Colorado that we have on the ballot this year. It's all of that that can create conflict. It's also, do you believe in QAnon or not? Do you believe in a pandemic or a plandemic? You know, all of these values conflicts. How do you get along with others who, in my own opinion, I feel like some of these people are just literally not insane, but delusional. How do I deal with that and not escalate conflict in my relationships when I clearly believe or see my values are so, my whole paradigm is so different? How do we deal with that when we're, some of those are in our own families or in our own network of people we work with? Or do you have some questions for that?
Yeah, it's very real what we're dealing with right now. So two things. First, I have an internal process that I've been doing lately with some loved ones in my life that every time I see a police officer, it was not normally my reaction, but now I say, they are a divine human being. And that has helped. And I will also acknowledge that the other day I saw this man driving a truck with a huge Trump flag behind it. And I will be frank, and before I knew it was happening, my arm was out the window and my middle finger was up, and it was a ridiculous moment. Like, I was like irrationally angry at an absolute stranger driving down the street. And then I said, they are divine human beings. It took a minute, but I got there. But I want to say that the conflict is valid. And so even as you say, Linda, like, de-escalate the conflict, I think that that should not be the goal right now, that it should be to flow with the conflict, that the de-escalation it breeds the anxiety and the depression. Not talking about these, quote, divisive topics is what got us into this mess. The good-meaning white people for a long time said, I'm not racist, instead of saying, we're all racist and we're founded on these ideas, and how can we alchemize these emotions and certainly a greater institutional racist system. So talking about it is important, and I think this is a moment, you know, figure out when works for you. Don't just do it all the time whenever you want to. You know, be clear before you even dive into a dialogue. But like you said, get clear about the morals and ethics with your loved ones. That's what definitely what I teach people, is that you cannot fight about politics or politicians, certainly right now. That is a lose-lose situation. Do not use the words Trump or Biden, because that won't ever work. But what does work is saying, you know, when you said this, I felt like I know that you to be a really kind person. I know that you care about our community, and I'm wondering why you don't care about other communities who look differently than ours. And getting the core of, you know, hey, this is our common ground. This is our, we both believe this. We're both in this family. We, you know, our parent taught us both this thing. So how come as siblings we're totally different? Getting back to really where we come from and also where we want to be. And what I do a lot is saying, okay, you're saying this thing and you're doing this completely other thing. So how do we get those things into alignment? And so as a chaplain, my job was never to really teach or heal or anything. My job was to serve as a mirror, because the person, the patient themselves, they are the teacher and the healer themselves. And so in any conflict with a person, especially around ideology, get to the core. Get to the emotion. There's an emotion wrapped up in that, because they're afraid of people who look different than them. They're afraid of what happens when you destroy a monument, that they'll destroy something else deeper. Like, what does that represent in people? So always get to the core. People are arguing symptoms. They're not getting to the root cause and the root emotion of something. A lot of people are fearful and grieving. That's actually where we can build empathy with people that are quite different. Everything that I've been saying lately about QAnon, I know that I can say about myself. I think, oh my gosh, these people are nuts. Well, I'm a little crazy right now too, right? I would be too in this moment. Okay, they're just like rational, like they're just irrational. They're trying to reach out and make sense of something. Well, so am I, right? I'm a minister. I'm a faithful person. I have thoughts about the universe and how we're supposed to be connected. You know, it's really the more I have empathy for these people, and the more I see that they're just human beings like me trying to cope poorly, definitely poorly, and often with guns in their hands. You know, that is definitely scary, but they're just people.
That's Catherine Newell, our guest this morning on KGNU, as we talk about dealing with anxiety and fear during these difficult times. Let's take a call. This is Anne from Boulder. Hi, Anne. You're on KGNU.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm very interested in the discussion. My question is, what's the best way to find a therapist when going through these kind of things? For me, I what are the best questions to ask for my situation? I kind of have trauma on top of trauma. I had a traumatic brain injury and, you know, finally healed getting back from that. But now I'm trying to get into the working world on top of the COVID world and finding a new way to work in this world. And I think a therapist is going to help me see what those steps are. And I'm, again, back to how do I find that person and what are the best questions to answer or to ask.
Catherine?
Yeah, there's lots of resources, I think, for therapists. It depends on if you have health insurance or not. Immediately, of course, you get caged in by the systemic stuff, right? If you don't have and the insurance, there's definitely, there's a great place called People House. I know in Denver, I'm not sure about in Boulder. But I think Boulder Community Health has several options as well. It depends on your style. You know, some people want someone faith-based, some people don't. The therapist is a great question asker. That's their job, is to ask questions. So I don't know if you really need to come with the questions. It's really the areas of your life that you really want to navigate through, which you're talking about dealing with past trauma, physical and mental / emotional, and then also reentering a work world. And I think that that's absolutely valid. This is such a transitional time. I think it's wonderful that you're reaching out for help. And the only thing that I tell people when they're searching for jobs and that kind of thing, I do a lot of visioning work with folks. And the question I always ask is, how will you serve? Because the world needs you. And so the question I always ask is how, like, if you're going to die in the next year or something, like, what is something you need to do? Like, I use death as often like a teacher, like, okay, there's a end of the line. What would you need to do? What do you need to do on this planet before you die? What lessons, what service, what are you going to gift us?
Good. If I could add to, and that if you are ever in need, you can also call the Colorado Crisis Services, which is just ColoradoCrisisServices.org, and you, they can help you also with resources.
And I would throw in Boulder Emotional Wellness, which has a sliding scale. Fees and a range of therapists, a longstanding nonprofit in the Boulder community that also does work outside of the Boulder area. So that's another potential resource. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thank you for the resources. It's very helpful.
And we're at 303-442-4242. We have time to take a couple more calls, talking about anxiety and fear and how we're dealing with it, challenges we're encountering. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 303-442-4242.
So, Catherine, I had a question about at the faith space. You have courses or workshops or conversations there. I know because of COVID that you have them online right now, but what kinds of resources there for people at the faith space might be able to help with either conflict, whether it's interpersonal or inner, or whether it's also conflict with systems? I mean, what kinds of resources do you have there for people?
Yeah, thank you for lifting that up. I was thinking about that when Sam was talking about QAnon and how it's a great community for people. And that's like really the reason why they, you know, are interested in it and why it fuels them. And I was thinking about the faith space and how different our community is. So if you're seeking community, we definitely have one that is not rooted in conspiracy theories. And we do a mix of both. We do a lot of community building. Like you said, the conversations with all sorts of people at the margins, whether that be, you know, Kabbalah and tarot teachers, or we had a conversation last week with Peter Groff, who was the Black Senate president here in Colorado for a while. It's really anyone at the margins. We really like intersections of humanity and interesting stories, and we want to highlight people that are and their stories and their wisdom that's not normally seen in mainstream. That fuels our faith and connects us to people that really might have similar or very different paradigms than ours. That we like a good challenge, right? We like to see things in different ways and be inspired by that. The diversity makes us more human and more whole. We also, we have lots of teaching opportunities as well, I teach and other people do as well. But you can take courses. I'm teaching something next week, actually Tuesday evening, I'm teaching a Ritual 101 course. And Monday evening, I'm teaching a Rituals for Online Learning course. And so we do a lot of ritual work at the faith space. It's a not religious organization at all. We're a spiritual, or really an interspiritual organization. And you can be an atheist and agnostic and also be a part of our community as well. But we use ritual to, and that's what these courses are teaching, is how to access these rituals in daily life. So Ritual 101 will go through decolonizing ritual and how to infuse that for resilience and sustainability in our own personal lives, how to make meaning and magic out of these moments. And, of course, the online rituals, a lot of folks are at home right now, and a lot of folks are teaching their kids at home right now or navigating them working and children learning. And so we thought it best to teach a course for people needing help with that transition and how to turn very simply space, not by changing a lot of things about the space, changing your paradigm and just a few elements can really shift how people view their living and learning space. From, okay, now I'm in school. Now I'm eating dinner. And it's the same table, but we're switching a few things around.
And let's take another call. We're on with Catherine Newell, who's the CEO and founder of the Faith Space, also a former hospital chaplain. And Jeff is with us from Denver. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. If my voice works okay. Yeah, I think I heard Catherine say something about that our grief can be found in our lungs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
The metaphysical meaning.
Yeah, even in that regard. Yeah, I just, the reason why I'm thinking about this is I was told I had the coronavirus back in late March of this year, and I've been having this cough hanging on, even though when I was retested a second time, they said, no, you don't have the virus at all. But the cough's basically been hanging on, and I think some of it is because I'm a single guy, I'm not working, I'm retired, I'm in my 60s, and I feel sad, extremely sad, that two of my biggest social outlets have been shut down. I've been a square dancer, and I've been someone who does another type of dancing called English country dance, and I realize a part of me feels really furious at the universe for having this virus come into my life as it is and cutting out my two greatest social networks. And it's also a time where, as I like to say, my inner kid can come out and be silly on the dance floor, and, you know, and I don't get criticized, and I can have fun, so I feel like I'm doing something good. So it's a challenge, and I don't always like it, and I still sometimes wish the universe didn't do this the way it did, but hopefully I'm learning something. I did realize recently there's two challenging people that don't like to listen to me, and during this pandemic, I don't talk to them, so it's because I have trouble setting boundaries with these two people. But I thought, man, it's nice to know at least I can see a blessing in this horrible thing called this pandemic. And thank you for letting me share.
Thanks for calling, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you. That's so real, what you said, the grief, and especially over such an embodied practice. I, too, love to dance. I am a salsa fan. And that's a huge shift to not have that kind of community. And I wonder if there are Zoom meetings and things like that where people could still dance with other people, but when their apartments or in their homes. I think that there might be spaces like that. I feel like people are becoming more and more creative in this pandemic. It certainly has made us at the Faith Space do that. I've had a few dance parties myself online, but the embodiment piece, I agree, is really crucial, and the grieving. And to be single right now, and especially those who are living alone, it's very real. And I think that as this virus slowly dissipates, if it does. I think having a, you know, small contingencies of community would be beneficial for folks.
And we just have a minute, but let's get in one more call from Foster. Hi, Foster. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, real quick. I just wanted to mention that I've come across the information recently through a health newsletter I subscribe to, that if you breathe through your belly instead of your chest, that it really eases a lot of anxiety and can create a much better mood and better sleep and everything. And a person can practice that by laying down or sitting down, ideally laying down, and just putting their hand on their belly and feeling whether they're breathing through their chest or their belly, and just concentrate on the abdominal breathing. So that's all I had to say.
Thanks, Foster. Belly breathing, a good tip, and perhaps a good one to end on. Catherine Newell, we appreciate your spending some time with us this morning. If people want to find out more about the faith space and your work, what's the best way for them to do that?
Then go to thefaithspace.org.
All right. And thank you so much, Catherine Newell and Linda
thank
Newell.
You.
Linda Newell, thanks as always for co-hosting this morning.
Thank you, both of you.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
And thanks to Maeve for handling the phones and everybody for listening in. If you're a member of the station, thank you for making everything we do possible. So 29 minutes after 9 o'clock, D. Ryder is here, ready to bring you the morning sound alternative, wonderful morning of music. So stay with us. This is listener-supported KGNU.